Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chiluminati Podcast, episode 139. As always, I am one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by my wonderful two co-hosts. I didn't think of anything today.
Maybe that's enough. Maybe it's just... maybe that's it.
You're trying to stop me, dude?
Maybe it's like, hey, these two wonderful people.
No, you're like the Mario and Luigi of LA, but not the video game Mario. Not the video game Mario and Luigi, the movie Mario and Luigi.
I'm John Leguizamo.
Yeah, I've seen that movie. I've seen that one.
Look, he is taller than me by a little bit. And also, let's be honest, if one of us is Bob Hoskins, it's probably me.
I don't even know what that means. If one of us is Bob Hoskins.
I don't feel like I want to explain it any more than that, but I do believe it. I think we all know what it means, sort of.
I don't know that.
Are you just talking about Bob Hoskins in general or Bob Hoskins on that movie specifically?
Bob Hoskins on that movie specifically. Okay. I don't think anybody's... Right. I feel for the guy. You know what I mean? He didn't want to be there. Nobody wanted to be there.
Nobody, not a single soul wanted to do that movie.
Nobody wanted to be there.
And we got a masterpiece because of it. So.
And we're the that of LA.
Yes, exactly. Correct. You don't want to do it at all. You'd have to be drunk to get through. I get it.
But you do not have to be drunk to visit patreon.com/Chiluminati Pod because you should be stone cold sober when experiencing things that are going to change your life. That's what I think. And you know what? Patreon.com/Chiluminati Pod. Why isn't that thing for you now already? Number one, keeps us going, keeps us living. It's like you're paying to further something. We're not corporate. It goes right to us. You know, you're just paying to make something that you like. Keep going.
What if we became corporate, though?
We infiltrated the system?
I mean, what if we became the system?
I mean, we're the Mario and Luigi of LA. We can do anything we want.
When we have the Chiluminati Pod Network, we've gone corporate.
The Chiluminati Pod Network?
Even then, we got multiple podcasts under us. Even then, we're nowhere near. Don't paint that as the end times. That's good. That just means we're diversifying our income and doing good. That's not corporate.
That'll never happen.
We're not going public with our company. We're not making millions of dollars on podcasts.
But if you go to patreon.com/Chiluminati Pod, we can get there one day.
Keep the lights on. Get free stuff. It's a win-win, people. It's a win-win. You like art? Guess what we got? Art. You like more Chiluminati? Guess what we got? Chiluminati minisodes. Okay? Think about that. That's all good stuff. And there's thousands of them on there. Thousands of minutes. Thousands of seconds. No.
Thank you. Okay. I was going to say, do we need to asterisk that? Because I'm not sure that's true.
Thousands of seconds of minisodes on there. Hundreds of thousands of seconds of minisodes on there that you've never heard before unless you're there on patreon.com/Chiluminati Pod. So get there, be there, be square. Because we don't care. You get it? Nope. We don't care if you're square. Be there. Just trying out some new...
I'm gonna let that one sit and simmer for a little bit.
What do you guys? You like that one? Should we keep that one?
I think
we
should.
We don't care. Chiluminati Podcast. Patreon.com.
Be there.
Be there.
Now we're here for something people have literally lost sleep over, Alex.
Yes.
And
yes, I know you're eager. Okay, here we are finally for what might actually be the last installment of the first Chiluminati episode of 2022.
I don't know what to even believe anymore.
This is now the unexpected second installment of the second part of the second part of my 2022 mini mysteries. That's three twos. Alex, the second part of the second part of the second part.
Before we begin, before we even start.
Yeah.
I need you to know that I have seen the subreddit.
Uh-huh.
I have seen the hope.
Uh-huh.
That you gave all these people that whatever riddle and mystery you've created is a thing. I'm gonna let you know. Yeah. I think that it's not. I think you said a thing just to mess with them. And now they're all completely bought into some Q-level mystery where you are about to be like, and then the dead celebrity is coming back. And I'm letting you know. I don't buy any of it.
You think I just messed with them.
You
think I would go as far as to make something up just to convince somebody that there was a mystery involving conspiracies on the internet?
Absolutely. If any of the three of us would be you.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
Well, you know what? I am the fucking Mario of LA. And, so,
and before I let you continue, how fitting that this supposed final part falls on the week of our fourth anniversary. Happy fourth anniversary, boys. On February 3rd.
Is it really 4 years?
February 3rd, 2018, we released our
It doesn't feel this long
first...
when you're with those you love. When you're with your true love, it doesn't feel as long.
That's so interesting.
4 years. I know, right? Happy 4 years, boys.
When did we start this? 2018?
February 3rd, 2018.
Yeah.
What? I must have been on drugs then.
The last
few
years didn't count.
I agree to this.
What? I DM'd the both of you. I got diamonds as a reply from Alex. I'll never forget. I think that meant fine.
Of course.
And your response was, how often? And at the time, I was like, every other week. And you're like, let's do it.
Yeah, so, you know. Often. It's a good question. Diamonds.
Yeah, I got diamonds from Alex, which I didn't know at the time meant yes, but I was like, is this normal?
You get it now.
Well, yeah, I didn't know
when
you
Mario
all that
of
well
LA
back.
Texts you diamonds, you know, that's go time.
Luigi Listen. Has plans. I gotta go find Daisy. I don't know where the hell that girl is.
She shows up at the end. There's something to be done about your kids. Listen. I know everybody has a lot of questions, and all I can promise is that they'll all be answered today, starting with the one you're probably wondering about most. I call these things mini mysteries because they're just like the regular mysteries that we cover on the show, except they're shorter. So that's why I call them mini.
Yeah, I got you so far following.
So that's one question answered. But seriously, there is only one of our 22 topics left to get into today. So I'm feeling pretty good that this is finally going to be someone else's turn soon. But just in case, let's get moving. And speaking of moving, I have recently come into some footage taken by a family while they were moving, by car that is, and what they saw and the video footage itself is what I'm going to be bringing to next week's minisode, which is available along with minisodes for every episode we put out in the past 2.5 years or so, patreon.com/chewmoneypod, which I've gotten into already. And I will say again, as I said last time, it is the best website of 2022. Everybody's already decided. Also, yeah. Ironically, I want to point out that minisodes are not mini versions of normal Chilluminati episodes, but rather a totally different style of show based on headlines. So the mini mysteries that I'm making now and the minisodes that we do most of the time, not related, and that's on me. I'll take that on. So that's another thing. That's another question answered. So
I'm just trying to follow along with
at least mini mysteries just lasted for this one episode. You know what I mean? As long as they're just confined to the first episode of 2022, that's fine.
Yeah. And thank you, ButcherBox, for sponsoring the episode. Yes.
Yeah. As I've been saying, please take care. Everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm an enthusiast at best. I'm an idiot at worst and absolutely not a historian by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, those are Jesse's episodes.
That said, I do my best to give you something that is both very entertaining and not misleading, so I hope that's cool enough with you. Also, content warning, this episode contains some mature and possibly offensive themes, including racism, sex crimes, and violence. In some ways, today's entry on the list is the tamest of the five episodes, weirdly. But either way, please remember that from this point on, you're proceeding at your own risk. I'm not going down if something I tell you makes you throw up, that's what I'm saying. Let's fucking go. Number 22, the man who tried to kill Edwin Walker. On the night of April 10th, 1963.
Time out. Both Mathis and I, you were like, the following story may contain some really crazy shit. And then Mathis and I were ready, and you're like, all right, and your first story, the man who may have killed Edwin Walker. We're just like, oh. You know, the look of disappointment. I was hoping it'd be like the murder of like Downton Abbey or something crazy.
The murder of Downton Abbey? Yeah. What are you talking about? They have another movie out. Don't, yeah, they're fine. They all, don't they worry all about die. Them.
That's the murder. There's a ghost in every movie. Frame.
That's a fictional show.
That's the movie we're watching this month on Chill Tracks.
Actually, technically, all the Downton Abbey people would be dead. So, like,
that's
you know,
true.
If you think
long
about
ago.
It.
Yeah, very true.
Maggie right, Smith. Right.
You know what?
Can live forever,
sometimes
though.
You know the saying: you can't judge a book by its cover. Yeah. Sell me, Alex. What do we got?
Yeah, don't worry. On the night of April 10th, 1963, General Edwin Walker was sitting at his desk, which was situated in the dining room of his home in Dallas, Texas. He was a rather notorious figure, stemming from the fact that in 1961, just 2 years earlier, he had resigned his commission from the U.S. Army during his tour of duty. He's the only person to do that in the 20th century, which is pretty crazy. Apparently, after successfully assisting under protest in the desegregation of Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1957, Walker began listening more and more to these weird pro-segregationist, anti-communist, like Red Scare ass radio shows, which is weird that there was like, it's crazy that like now there's podcasts where people are getting all this crazy disinformation. And now, like back then, they're like these rich people who like would just like literally they were like the only people who could afford to buy a radio station. So they just like pay a fuckload of money and just like reach people with their dumbass ideas. He met with the John Birch Society also, which is this sort of like shadowy, extreme far right political advocacy group about advancing his opinion that Eisenhower was a communist operative and that the civil rights activism that was going on in the 50s and 60s, early 60s was a communist plot. So that's the type of guy he was, real cool guy. I guess it was in 1959 was the first time that he tried to like resign and become like an evil conservative media demon type guy. But Eisenhower wouldn't accept it and instead sent him to command 10,000 troops in Germany. And while he had these 10,000 troops under his command, he'd do all these weird, like, quote unquote, pro-blue. He called it pro-blue programs, which are pro-blue in the sense that they're anti-red and they're basically like military indoctrination programs. He'd pass out literature from the John Birch Society reading materials and using the conservative voting index, he would like literally coerce soldiers into like he would give them like Republican biased instructions for filling out their ballots during elections, which is like you're like disenfranchising soldiers kind of until he got in trouble and he was reassigned to Hawaii to work in training and ops. Which would, you know, what do you do with a general? You don't want to do anything. So in 1961, he decided he would be more successful as a racist, conspiracy theorist, political shitlord personality. So he finally got Eisenhower to accept his resignation and he jumped into a career of talking to people on microphones, giving speeches, interviews, stuff like that, riling up white segregationalists and uneducated lifers into supporting or condemning whatever he needed them to do, even if it was against their own self-interest. This is the classic sort of thing that happens with people like this. Then he ran for governor of Texas in 1962, but he dropped out after the first primary for the Democratic Party. He just like lost, got like sixth place. So he lost the race. And then later that year, 1962, he took an active role in the protesting the enrollment of an African-American veteran named James Meredith at the University of Mississippi. So literally in 57, Eisenhower asked him, hey, will you like assist in the desegregation of this school? And he was like, I don't want to, but I will. So he did that. And then now he's protesting against it. Here's a little quote for Jesse to read from him, from a statement that he made on TV on September 29th, 1962.
This is Edwin A. Walker. I am in Mississippi besides Governor Ross Barnett. I call for a national protest against conspiracy from within. Rally to the cause of freedom and righteous indignation, violent vocal protest, and bitter silence under the flag of Mississippi at the use of federal troops. This today is a disgrace to the nation in dire peril, a disgrace beyond the capacity of anyone except its enemies. This is the conspiracy of crucifixion by Antichrist conspirators of the Supreme Court and their denial of prayer and their betrayal of the nation.
So this is just like a normal White House briefing from like 2018, basically.
Yeah.
Next day on September 30th, there was a 15-hour riot on the campus where six federal marshals were shot. Two people were shot execution style. Hundreds more people were hurt. And unlike high-profile individuals who incite riots today, Walker was actually arrested on charges of sedition and insurrection. But he was eventually released on bond and greeted as a hero by a bunch of whatever the 60s version of like MAGA folks are. Like when he came out, he was like a hero to them. And in January 1963, the federal grand jury that met to indict adjourned without doing so, without indicting him, and the charges were dismissed. So anyway, that's who he is. But let's go back to April 10th, 1963, when he's sitting in his dining room in April. A bullet suddenly whizzes past him, almost hits him in the head, just barely misses his head, clacks into the frame of his dining room window, sends shards of the window frame flying into his arm skin and causes him some minor injuries. According to the police working on the case, quote, whoever shot at the general was playing for keeps. The sniper wasn't trying to scare him. He was shooting to kill. Apparently, the alleged shooter had purchased the rifle that he used to shoot at the general a week after he made a speech calling for the U.S. military to, quote, liquidate the communist scourge that has descended upon the island of Cuba. So that riled this guy up about this gun. The shooter's wife said that on the night of the attempted assassination, the man left her a note explaining where he was going and what she should do if he did not return, and that he believed he was putting down someone who he believed to be the leader of a, quote, fascist organization. However, Walker obviously survived and went on to be a dick to literally everybody until he died of lung cancer in 1993 without a wife or any children. Though he was arrested for public lewdness after groping and propositioning undercover policemen in a public restroom in 1973 and again was arrested for public lewdness in 1977. And just to show how little he was affected by the shooting, that same year he was shot at in 1963, he also mobilized his followers into an organized attack on Adlai Stevenson on October 24th. And then the following month, on November 22nd, he organized a black-bordered advertisement as well as publicity handbills, which he distributed in advance of President Kennedy's motorcade through the city later that morning. So now I should probably start talking about the mysterious puzzle that I mentioned at the end of the last episode. So really quickly, here's the clue again. If you remember what I said last week, it was this. If the title of each episode part was reduced to a single digit, you might be able to figure it out, right? That's what I said. So let's break that down. Or actually, let's leave it up to Reddit user HTES1, who said this on the Chilluminati subreddit. The titles via Alex are part one of one, part two of one, part one of two, part two of two. So maybe 1212 or 1122, or maybe it's just a callback to the start of the episode where they're talking about these episodes being code for Alex being a serial killer.
Are you about to admit to something here?
Yeah. So this was actually super close. But then 10 days ago, another user posted a comment on that said 1122, as in 11/22/63. Are we finally getting a JFK episode? And if you go on the Reddit and you look at that post, you will see that I made eyeball emojis to that post in my comment. Did. Because they were 100% right. I am doing a JFK episode. So kudos to them. They figured it out. But now their Reddit account is deleted. So is that a coincidence? Yes. But is it? Yes, it is a coincidence. Anyway, the rest of this episode is going to be the secret part one to the long-awaited four-part John F. Kennedy assassination episode, which
wait,
I promised
wait,
to
wait,
you.
Wait, 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 wait! Are we going into a four-parter now?
No. I promised you this episode over 2 years ago. This is part one. Every other episode that I do for the rest of time is going to be a JFK episode until it's done.
Wait, but what? Aren't there more that you have to do from 22?
So you're going to set one
up. No, we've done 21 of the mystery of the mini mysteries. This is mystery 22, the man who almost shot Edwin Walker, which we're getting into now. And then also this episode isn't just part two of part two of two, part two. It's Mathis. Also... part one of the four-part JFK episode.
Can I clarify then, after today's episode, you go on a mini hiatus from doing episodes and
I don't go on a mini hiatus. It's just life goes on. Mathis. You do an episode, everybody does episodes.
No, Mathis, me.
Then I do an episode about whatever I want.
Mathis, you
then I come back with an episode
control.
About JFK.
You've lost control the
then
entire show.
Then I come
show.
Back with an episode about whatever I want.
This man
then I come
is
back with an
out
episode about
of
JFK.
Control.
And he every is, other time you see me on as the episode runner, you'll get an episode about JFK.
We have gone at it. We're out of control.
I'll bring it back under control next week. It's back under control until Alex has the reins again, which could happen at any point. You know, like
next time I do it, no JFK. The time after that, JFK.
So you're going to alternate after this. Alex episode is a JFK episode.
Yeah. What?
I thought you said that was gonna, you were going to finish it. This is nonsense. This is going to be a four-part
JFK episode that's coming every other time. That comes
every so often whenever you feel like it.
Every other time I do an episode.
That would have been every other time.
Every other time.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What do you mean every other time?
Every other time. What? I do an episode, then it's a JFK. Then I do an episode, then it's a JFK.
You talked to me like he fucking consulted me or anything. I didn't have that. We're equal partners in this fucking show.
Oh, I'm trying to tell you. I don't feel like I'm an equal.
What are you talking about?
How dare you?
JFK part one.
How dare you do this?
JFK part one today.
Right. And then JFK part two, probably next episode, April sometime.
Because I'm about to do a
three or four parter that's going to go straight on. Yeah. I'm going to finish it.
Then I'll be back.
18 part series. This is madness. What happened?
Then I'll be back. What happened to us?
What do you mean we've already done four part series in the past?
Oh my God.
This is one episode. What are you guys talking about? There has been one episode this year.
No, you can't. There are four lights, Alex. There are four lights.
Four lights.
All right. So first, today we're going to do a timeline of the events that occurred that day.
That's fine. I just feel like I can hear the screaming audience in the future.
This one's going through time and space. This one's like the prologue. You have to think about this one as the prologue to like three big chunky episodes about JFK. Yeah, because here's the thing about JFK, right? There's so many different, completely different theories about JFK.
Yeah.
That like the facts of the different theories require different people to do different things in like different parallel universes to each other, pretty much. Right.
Right? I mean, you're totally right.
So I'm gonna do today, what I'm gonna tell you is I'm gonna do a timeline of the actual days of the assassination. You're gonna sort of understand the structure of these couple of days in November.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a really good understanding of that. And we're going to just a general idea of what this is and why people are worried about it. And then the next three episodes about this that you're going to get are each going to be a deep dive into one of the big theories about JFK.
So you're like laying a foundation upon which you're building a JFK house.
Yeah. And then next time you see me, no JFK. And then JFK.
Right.
And then no JFK. And then JFK.
And then we find out the final episode of JFK, this JFK house you've been building, will turn into the final episode of the Greenstone Trilogy.
I have no comment on that at this time. I just want to sprinkle some more chaos in there. I just want everybody to know that I haven't forgotten one thing that I've ever said into this microphone for any reason.
You got a fucking steel trap brain.
It's all part of the plan. It's all coming together.
Jesse's like, he's gone now. It's all coming together.
And he's zenned
out.
If you guys were looking for a more politically and morally positive conspiracy theory involving a Kennedy to get obsessed with on the internet, you're in the right place, baby. All right. Here we go. I just figure a lot of people don't know, like if you're not American or you don't care about history, you probably don't know that much about this. You probably know very basics. You've probably seen a clip of it in media somewhere. But I promise that later in the year when this is all over, you're going to feel like Charlie in the Pepe Sylvia episode. You know what I mean? He's just going to be like
extremely
confused and stupid.
No. Do we watch the same episode?
I'm pretty sure Pepe Sylvia was Pennsylvania and he's an idiot and he thinks everyone in the office is getting mail from Pepe Sylvia, but there is no Pepe Sylvia because it's insane. Are you saying that everyone listening is going to go crazy and become an insane person?
All right, Barney, roll the tape.
I don't know what we're referencing.
Barney, roll the tape. You guys can't see Barney? No. Okay, never mind. All right. For this next part, shout out to the Sixth Floor Museum at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. Somebody who's seen the show is going to laugh at that. It's actually a really cool place. What?
I know. We got to get going here. I know. What, Jesse?
Nothing.
You can't nothing me after that.
Nothing. We're fine. It's all good.
What happened?
I have an understanding of what's about to happen. I do.
Mathis prepared for the... It's okay. You know what? I'm prepared too. It's fine.
Thank you. Thank you for. I'm curious when, what month the final episode of JFK is going to happen. Like, I'm like, is it going to be like December 2022 and it all wraps up?
Who knows? I do more than six episodes this year.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You got a nice chonky break coming up though. So.
Yes. Are we all okay now? Are we ready to go into the timeline of the JFK assassination?
I'm very ready.
I'm good.
Here we go. Shout outs to the sixth floor museum at Dealey Plaza in Dallas. It's very cool in there. If you have a chance to go check it out. I was there like maybe 8 or 9 years ago. It's really creepy actually to just stand there and be in that place that you see from like literally like Intro to Watchmen, a million video games, like just it's a place that's like iconic outside of history and in media because it's so important to American history. But it's such a negative event. So it's really weird because it's not really like, it was just one guy that died, but it's just a crazy thing. Anyway, if you didn't already figure it out, the man who shot at General Walker, Edwin Walker, was none other than Lee Harvey Oswald, a man who just a few months later would become famous for fatally shooting then current U.S. President John F. Kennedy while he was out in a motorcade through downtown Dallas. There's a lot of theories out there as to exactly who, or more accurately, what kind of person Lee Harvey Oswald is, and we'll go deeper into that one of the next episodes. But for now, let's just say he was a man from Louisiana who joined the Marines at 17, got in a lot of trouble while he was there, was honorably released into the reserve after being jailed, and then he flew to Europe and defected over to the Soviet Union at age 20 in 1959. So, tumultuous youth. Before he was 20, he went to the Marines, dropped out, and moved to the Soviet Union and like met someone there. While there, he gets married to a woman called Marina. He had a little girl with her. And then just a few years later, they petition for a visa, are able to return to Dallas together in 1962, where they have another daughter. And he bounces between a couple odd jobs here and there in Dallas while he's there. Some people say he spoke really good Russian, but not everybody says that. But it was just a little bit after being fired at a graphics arts firm the following April in 1963, that he decided to get on a bus with his 6.5 millimeter Carcano rifle that he'd bought the month before to get ready to shoot Edwin Walker and take it over to General Walker's house before running off to lay low in New Orleans a week or two later after he tried and failed to shoot him. So while there, he did some work printing and passing out leaflets for the Fidel Castro Fair Play for Cuba Committee. And even had a radio debate against two prominent right-wing political figures, like on the radio. He actually went on the radio himself and debated them. But eventually he made his way to Mexico by September to try and apply for a visa to Cuba. But that wasn't approved until October 18th. And by then he was already back in Dallas, where he had just started working 2 days earlier, filling orders at the Texas School Book Depository, which was overlooking Dealey Plaza in downtown Dallas, where apparently for the short time that he worked there, he was seen as a super hard, good worker who wasn't well liked. You know, wasn't like he was like known for being nice, but he wasn't in any way hated or negative felt by, really.
He was kind of like a normal hard worker guy that most people probably didn't pay much attention to.
Yeah, overall. Yeah, exactly. Like I say, you probably have a lot of questions about Oswald. We'll get into them eventually. Trust me. But for now, I'm going to continue with the timeline.
You're laying the foundation, a deep dive into Oswald. I'm excited for when we do that because I know a lot about him, too. And he's a fucking weird, but fascinating dude.
So here is a quote for Mathis to read from the news on November 8th, 1963, to get us started. Set the tone. Give everybody the vibes.
President Kennedy's itinerary in Texas has now been made official. In addition to stops in Houston, Austin, and San Antonio, the chief executive will be in Dallas and Fort Worth on November 22nd. Mr. Kennedy's Dallas appearance will be in the form of a noon speech sponsored by the influential Dallas Citizens Council and the Graduate Research Center. It will be held either in the Trademark or on Stemmons Freeway or the Women's Building at the State Fairgrounds.
Yeah. So that was what was going on. He's going on like a tour in Texas to do some stuff. On November 16th, 8 days later, plans are finalized and includes a motorcade running from Dallas Love Field, which is an airport, to a luncheon, which ended up being scheduled at the Trademark of the two locations. And on the 21st, one day before the actual motorcade was going to happen, the actual route the cars were going to drive was published in the newspaper, which I guess makes sense if you want to come out and see the president, but also seems like a security risk in hindsight, considering what the hell went down. But I mean, you know, I don't know. People want to go get in line, take pictures, wave at the president. So it makes sense. And, you know, like nobody had been assassinated before. So,
and I feel like there was.
I can think of one guy who would be like, hold on.
Yeah, his head, was shot in the back of the head.
Yeah, but in this type of context, right? Like this was a totally different type of assassination than Abraham Lincoln. That was like somebody got in close to him, put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger.
What's more interesting too is that, you know, at this time too, Dallas was horrendously anti-Kennedy. Like going into Dallas as Kennedy and going in with the
white people in Dallas were very anti-Kennedy. Let's put it that way.
Yes, but I was trying to say like just like going, they were aggressively so, like to the point where it was a danger, but he still wanted to go out there anyway.
Yes, and speaking of which, let me give you a little, I said Edwin Walker published like a pamphlet that he handed out and put on people's cars that day. Here's the text of that pamphlet for Jesse to read. Oh, wait, is it too big? All right, it's going in the Twitter. Hold on.
Okay.
We got to
always got that back.
We got that chunky boy quote for the Twitter.
Chunker. You know what I'm saying?
That big boy thicky quote. Oh, wait, I opened the wrong one. This is this is a DM with me and Mathis. That's the lewds.
Oh, yeah, it's the loot. That's the loot thread.
Whoa. Here's the good one.
He got some extra loot that I had.
You guys, oh my God, you guys have a secret chat?
Just for loot.
Is that where you talk? Is that where you talk about the fact that you're letting Alex pull us into insanity? Is that
four-year anniversary. Surprise. Oh. Alex is in charge now.
The
forever.
Only insanity is the insanity that you perceive, my man. You know what I mean?
Well, then I am cuckoo bananas. All right. Wanted for treason. This man is wanted for treasonous activities against the United States. One, betraying the Constitution, which he swore to uphold. He is turning sovereignty of the U.S. over to the communist-controlled United Nations. He is betraying our friends Cuba, Katanga, Portugal, and befriending our enemies, Russia, Yugoslavia, Poland. I love, okay.
Poland in there, you know.
Two, he has been wrong on innumerable issues affecting the security of the U.S., United Nations, Berlin Wall, missile removal, Cuba, wheat deals, test ban treaty, etc. Three, he has been lax in enforcing communist registration laws. Four, he has given support and encouragement to the communist-inspired racial riots. Five, he has illegally invaded a sovereign state with federal troops. Six, he has consistently appointed anti-Christians to the federal office, upholds the Supreme Court in its anti-Christian rulings. Aliens and unknown communists abound in federal offices. Seven, he has been caught in fantastic lies to the American people, including personal ones, like his previous marriage and divorce.
Man, if anything, the 60s, dude. Thank God we're past all that.
Yeah, thank God we moved on from that crazy stuff.
It gives me like comfort almost. Like
to know that we've never changed.
In my mind all the time, like an existential feeling of like dread that like finally we've all gone insane and like... The lunatics are running the asylum and like nobody knows fucking anything. And it's like Idiocracy is just like not a parody anymore.
They just rebrand every 10 years. Yeah. Basically.
I get that feeling all the time. And then I realize, no, that's just what we've all been dealing with. anyway, President Kennedy arrives in San Antonio on Air Force One, along with his wife and entourage earlier that day, speaks to the League of United Latin American Citizens in Houston, has a dinner honoring U.S. Representative Albert Thomas at the Sam Houston Coliseum. At 11:50 p.m., the Kennedys arrive at the Hotel Texas in Fort Worth. It's a huge affair. Tons of people and cameras both in and both in front of the hotel and inside the lobby as they try and wade through it. But finally, they end up sleeping their last night together in Suite 850 at the Hotel Texas. That same night, Lee Harvey Oswald gets a ride from work to the home of Ruth Payne, where he spends the night with his wife, Marina, and daughters before heading back to work the next day with his co-worker, Buell Wesley Frazier, who said he came in that day at 7:21 a.m. holding a huge brown paper bag, which he said held, quote, curtain rods. At 8:45, yeah, I know.
You got it, bud. No problem. Yeah. No questions curtain here. Rods, enjoy your day.
Just bringing them to work with you, 7:20 in the morning. Guess you needed them to be at home with you. At 8:45 a.m., Kennedy delivers an unplanned speech to the absolutely huge crowds waiting for him in front of the Hotel Texas. They set up a whole thing with cameras and microphones. He's able to do it in the parking lot, meet people, touch everybody's hands and stuff before heading in for another big speech at the Chamber of Commerce breakfast at 9:45, which ends up being his last ever public address. At 10:40, the Kennedys head out to the Carswell Air Force Base for a quick jaunt on Air Force One from Houston from Fort Worth to Dallas Love Field for the start of the motorcade that they announced. And it's so busy that they just decide, you know what? Fuck everything else we're going to do. We're just going to like say what's up to the people at the gates to the airport, and then we're going to get in the car and leave. And they leave at around 11:52 a.m. By 12:27 p.m., crowds of almost 200,000 people are lining Main Street in downtown Dallas as the Kennedy's car makes its way along the route that was published in the paper. President Kennedy and his wife, Jacqueline, are accompanied in the vehicle by Governor Connally and his wife, Nellie. And they're sitting like the Kennedys in the back, the Connallys ahead of them. 12:30 p.m., as their four-door 1961 open-top Lincoln Continental limousine enters Dealey Plaza, Nellie Connally turns to Kennedy and says, quote, Mr. President, you can't say Dallas doesn't love you. And Kennedy smiles at her and replies, no, you certainly can't. And right moments later, as the car makes a left turn onto Elm Street on its way to the Stemmons Freeway exit at 11 miles per hour, it is past. It goes past the Texas School Book Depository where Lee Harvey Oswald worked. Oswald was even seen on the sixth floor of that building twice on the day of the shooting.
Just checking out my curtain rods out here. Nothing to worry
hanging
about,
some
anybody.
On the sixth floor window. No big deal. Kennedy begins to wave at someone in the crowd and a shot rings out. A few people realize what it was right away, but the average person probably wouldn't have recognized it as a gunshot. But thanks to the famous Zapruder film of the incident that exists out there, you can watch it online if you want. But I warn you that if you are not okay with watching some man get his skull cap blown off without any sort of, you know, censoring or anything, you know, don't watch that unless you're ready for that.
It can be brutal.
Yeah. But within 1 second from watching that film, we can tell that the governor and the president both heard the shot because they both turned to look within 1 second at something, what's going on. Governor Connally couldn't see the president, so he started to turn back towards him. And even though he didn't remember hearing a second shot, he was hit in the upper right back at that moment by a bullet, which came out of the other side of his body, went through his right arm and into his thigh. So that's a pretty crazy little bullet there, if you know what I'm saying. Here's a quote from Mathis to read of what Governor Connally said next. And please try and give this the proper gravitas. If you can just imagine you've just been shot in a car with the president of the United States.
All right. Oh, no. My God, they're going to kill us all.
There you go. That's perfect. I felt like I was there. That was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I really transported yourself back into that time zone.
Thank you for doing that for me. Even though the governor didn't remember hearing it, 80% of the people there that day remember hearing three shots in pretty short order. Nellie Connally, the governor's wife, said that after hearing a loud sound off to her right, she remembers looking at the president, who we can confirm from the film, then raised his elbows in front of his neck and face. Then she heard a second shot and her husband yelling. And when she turned to look at her husband, a third shot rang out and she was suddenly splashed and covered with warm bits of skull, blood, and brain while she was looking away. According to the official story, what happened was that Kennedy started out waving, was also struck by the same bullet that hit the governor because the way the car was, I mean, if you look at it, if you're picturing it and you're picturing one bullet do that, it seems like almost impossible. But you have to know that the way they were sitting in the car, they were not even sitting at the same height as each other in the car. So it was a very like different situation than you would expect it to be. So he's hit by the same bullet that hits the governor. It goes through his neck. It goes through a spinal vertebra and it nicks the top of his right lung. And then he alone is hit by the third bullet, which enters the rear of his skull, blowing his scalp and brain out through the other side and into and onto the car and the Secret Service agents riding on the car. According to Agent Clint Hill, who was riding one car behind the president, 5 seconds passed between the first shot that he heard and the one that killed the president. So just to give you an idea of how fast this all went down, it was about 3 shots in the time it takes for 5 seconds to pass by. Though she later had no memory of doing so, after JFK was hit in the head, Jackie Kennedy began climbing out the back of the limousine. If you look at the Zapruder film, to me, it looks like maybe she's reaching for something or calling to someone around her or maybe trying to scoop up some of the brain matter or something like that. And then they all suddenly like get back down into the car and speed off. I have a quote from Jackie Onassis for Jesse to read here. There you go.
All the ride to the hospital, I kept bending over. Is that what I just? All the ride to the hospital, I kept bending over him saying, Jack, can you hear me? I love you, Jack. I kept holding the top of his head down, trying to keep the brains in.
Pretty fucked up shit. But at 12:32, Lee Harvey Oswald is seen in the second floor lunchroom at the Texas School Book Depository within 90 seconds of the shooting, before leaving the building and grabbing a taxi back over to where he's staying in a part of Dallas known as Oak Cliff. By 12:34, which again, this is 4 minutes after this has happened, announcements start to come over the newswire reporting the shooting. And here's one for Mathis to read to give us the flavor. This one's going to have to go in the Twitter undoubtedly. So I'm just going to just go ahead and drop it there without even thinking about it. This is a newswire report.
Oh, there it is. The president, his limp body cradled in the arms of his wife, was rushed to Parkland Hospital. The governor also was taken to Parkland. Clint Hill, a Secret Service agent assigned to Mrs. Kennedy, said he's dead as the president was lifted from the rear of the White House touring car, the famous bubble top from Washington. He was rushed to an emergency room in the hospital. Other White House officials were in doubt as the corridors of the hospital erupted in pandemonium. The incident occurred just east of the triple underpass facing a park in downtown Dallas. Reporters about 5 car lengths behind the chief executive heard what sounded like 3 bursts of gunfire. Secret Service agents in a follow-up car quickly unlimbered their automatic rifles. The bubble top of the president's car was down. They drew their pistols, but the damage was done. The president was slumped over in the back of the car face down. Connolly lay on the floor of the rear seat, holes in chest.
Okay, yeah, that's it. Sorry, I actually paced a little bit more.
You good.
But yeah, pretty wild shit. Pretty nuts situation. At 12:45 p.m., the director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, calls Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy to tell him his brother's been shot. At the same moment, the first description of the suspect goes on the police radio. I'm going to drop that into the Zoom chat for Jesse to read right here.
The suspect from Elm in Houston is reported to be an unknown white male, about 30, slender build, 5 feet 10 inches tall, 165 pounds, armed with what is thought to be a 30-30 rifle.
Yeah, so that's like 15 minutes after the shooting. At 12:58, Father Oscar Huber arrives to administer last rites to the president at Parkland Memorial Hospital. And back in Oak Cliff, Lee Harvey Oswald grabs his handgun from his room where he was renting at 1026 Beckley Ave and walks out the front door. And at 1 o'clock p.m., November 22nd, 1963, President Kennedy is pronounced dead at Parkland Memorial when his heart, there's no heart function or something like that. Though I suspect that he was dead long before this, considering he was shot in the fucking head.
Yeah, I imagine he had been dead for a while.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Zapruder film all the way through, but it is a pretty, like, I don't see anybody getting up from that injury and living for any amount of time.
Yeah, no, I've seen the film. Yeah. It's. I don't see him living past that either.
Again,
yeah,
his body may have been working, but
yeah,
I mean, that shot is like,
again, the pilot. Folks, do not watch that clip unless you are truly ready to watch something pretty stunning.
Or completely desensitized like us.
Yeah.
Whoa, don't include me in that.
All right. Well, like me then.
Yeah, come on. Haven't you seen Jet? Sensitive. He's always crying during these awful episodes with all the violence.
I'm very sensitive and not the entire time like, I love history. It's so interesting.
I love history.
I love it so much.
I wish that was everyone. That's like the idea. That should be the ideal man. That should be the ideal mate. Is somebody who's
heard
like
that. Everybody out there. Jesse is the ideal
I
mate.
Fucking the ideal love history. Hey, baby. Have I ever told you about historical facts that I'm really passionate about?
George Washington had wooden teeth. Oh, fuck. All right. Oh. I don't even know if he actually did. That's a myth. That's another history's mysteries.
Let me tell you about cherry trees. Oh, that's a whole thing.
All right. At 1:12 p.m., 42 minutes after the shooting, during a search of the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, Dallas County Deputy Sheriff Luke Mooney heads to the southeast corner of the building near the window and finds a little sniper nest with three empty rifle shells. 10 minutes later, Dallas County Deputy Sheriff Eugene Boone finds a 6.5mm Carcano rifle, exactly the same MO style as the ones that were used to shoot at General Edwin Walker, et cetera, et cetera. Wedged between some boxes nearby on the other side of the room. 1:15 p.m., Dallas Police Officer J.D. Tippett stops Lee Harvey Oswald near 10th and Patton and Oak Cliff for matching the description on the APB. Oswald shoots and kills the man to escape. So he just dead-ass shoots a cop in the middle of the street in broad daylight just after doing what he did at the depository.
He certainly seems like he lost his nerve after that and went pure panic mode.
100%. At 1:30 p.m., Press Secretary Malcolm Kilduff officially announces the death of President Kennedy from a nurse's classroom at Parkland Memorial. And during the commotion at the hospital, employee Daryl Tomlinson discovers a bullet on a stretcher in the hallway, which is later identified as Warren Commission Exhibit 3399. You may see more about this bullet later in these episodes. Having the cops called on him, police subdue and arrest Lee Harvey Oswald on Jefferson Boulevard in Oak Cliff at the Texas Theater.
Insane factoid that he, rather than pay, he tried to sneak in.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's always been crazy.
It's just, it seems, I don't know. I think he was not thinking clearly.
Yeah, I clearly think he lost his nerve after that, like, and just went manic.
That is, if you believe the official story. Just kidding.
Yeah.
By 2:20.
That's another one.
Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been laying seeds throughout this of weird things that maybe are going to come back later. So you can break those down. I have
my belief in what happened, and I'll be curious to see.
I'm going to ask you guys at the end what your official thoughts on it are, because I'm not going to weigh in until the very end of the whole thing with what I think. But yeah, by 2:20 p.m., he's already being interrogated by Captain Will Fritz at Dallas Police Headquarters. And over the next 2 hours, Ruth Payne's house, where his wife was staying, and his room in Oak Cliff are both searched, and Oswald is taken to several identification lineup type situations. At 2:38 p.m., just 2 hours after the shooting, Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, who was also in the motorcade and did not get hurt, is given the oath of office aboard Air Force One. By 6:35 p.m., President's body is given an autopsy at Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland. And by 7:10, Oswald is charged with the murder of Officer Phil Tippett, or J.D. Tippett. Phil Tippett is somebody totally different. The next day at 1:30 a.m., the Dallas police formally charge Oswald with the president's murder, and they hold a press showing with Oswald in the basement assembly room at police headquarters. He claims to be a patsy set up because of his history in the Soviet Union, which I barely got into a second ago. And Oswald is also identified as the owner of the Carcano rifle. At 1:30 p.m., just 25 hours later, President Johnson holds his first cabinet meeting already, which is nuts. On November 24th at 11:17 a.m., Carousel Club owner Jack Ruby sends a $25 money order to his employee Karen Littlelyn Bennett from a Western Union near police headquarters downtown at 11:17 a.m. At 11:21, during a prisoner transfer in the basement of police headquarters, just 4 minutes later, Jack Ruby steps out of the crowd and fatally shoots Oswald live on NBC. It's nuts. That's one of the only times that's ever happened. Oswald is taken to Parkland Memorial, where some of the same doctors who worked on Kennedy try to save his life now. But at 1:07 p.m., I doubt they were working super hard, number one. But number two, at 1:07 p.m., almost exactly 2 days after the shooting, the president, he's pronounced dead himself, which also doesn't normally happen to people who are in police custody. 5 days later, on November 29th, the Warren Commission, aka the President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy, is formed by President Johnson. And the final report concluded that Oswald acted alone in killing the president and wounding Connally, and that Jack Ruby acted alone in killing Oswald. It was 888 pages long and was released to the public 3 days after it was presented to President Johnson on September 24th, 1964, not even a year later. And that, my friends, is the timeline and the story of the man who tried to kill Edwin Walker. We'll be getting much deeper into this story as time goes on, but for now, let's just quickly take a look at an article from this week in the New York Post for a little taste of what discourse is like around the assassination today. Basically, the article is covering the release of a new book by the now 90-year-old forensic pathologist, a guy called Dr. Cyril Wecht, who in 1978 declared that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone in assassinating the president. He believes it's, quote, bullshit that young people today are being taught that the president was killed by a lone, unhinged gunman. He believes that Oswald was some kind of CIA agent that maybe the order came from somebody like Alan Dulles, who was the director of the CIA from 1953 to 1961 and who was disgruntled by the way Kennedy handled the failed Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba.
If you want to learn more about Dulles, go listen to our MK Ultra episode. Yeah, he is a central figure in the entire creation of that.
Basically, there was an invasion in Cuba that was going to be like a big game changer for like communist control in the region. At the very last minute, Kennedy sort of like soft dicked it and decided not to do it, that it was probably smarter not to fucking invade Cuba for no reason.
And he was right.
100% he made the right call, but basically he left those people to die on that beach without authorizing their air support. And so you can imagine how there's some seriously high up people at the government that are pretty pissed at Kennedy for that. And it's even more complex than that, but we're not.
Best way to imagine it, if you're thinking about today in today's world, is the same reaction people had when we left Afghanistan. And there were many people that worked with us that we had secretly had on the books. And then it was like, we got to go. Yeah. And then you saw all the people who were freaked out, like, we're leaving people that helped us behind. Very similar in sort of attitude of, you can understand why people be very upset.
Except this was also doubly worse because these people were like, the plan is this, we're going to go do this, and at this moment, this is going to happen. Yeah. And then that thing just didn't happen, and they all died. You know what I mean? It's fucking terrible. But yeah, then Kennedy was mad about the way that Dulles handled it and fired him, right? So here's a quote from Dr. Wecht about that for Mathis to read really quick.
Kennedy had fired Alan Dulles because he was really pissed off about what the CIA was doing. Then who gets appointed to the Warren Commission? Dulles. It stinks to high heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, it speaks to this. I mean, one day I would love to do like a proper CIA series at some point, but it speaks to the power the CIA has because, I mean, they were created to operate outside the bounds of normal law. And when you're just like, okay, you can't do that anymore, the people over there are going to be like, maybe we can though.
Right. That's if there was one thing that I could like know about the government, it's like how real the like X-Files-ness is.
Yeah. Again, go listen to our MK Ultra for just the base of like what that was like and a hint at many of the other projects that they were doing and still probably are doing today.
Hmm. I just want to know how like shadow government-y it is. I want to know like how Game of Thrones it is between all the different agencies. I'm just interested in that.
I wonder if you could look at the Kennedy assassination as the final nail in the coffin that if anybody put it, being able to stop the CIA from becoming the beast that they eventually do become. I mean, they were already a beast in the 60s and in many, many ways, but there were still people attempting to put them in reins on them. And that
even
just
now,
stopped.
Even now, like there's power between the FBI and the CIA. Look at all the stuff with what's his name? Who blew the whistle on Hillary or whatever. What the hell is his name?
Wait,
No. Jesse can help me with this. What's this guy's name? The FBI guy, the Boy Scout guy who was like, I had to say something. And he basically lost Clinton the election. What the fuck is that guy's name? There's so many things that have happened now. I thought I would never forget this man's name, but literally so much shit has happened that I can't think of it. What the hell is his name?
It's his CIA training. He's wiped our minds, dude.
James Comey.
Yes.
He wrote a book. Oh my God.
Boy, did I, yeah. Totally forgot that man existed.
So important to like modern history.
I was about to be like Mueller, obviously, but I was like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah, it's not even totally Mueller. This was before that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally forgot this man. Yeah. This was like 10 days before the election guy. Yeah.
Think about Comey. Think about Mueller. Think about how much effect those things have on the politics of the country. It's pretty nuts. But just to give context about this guy, Dr. Wecht, this guy is not like a crackpot guy. This is not like some guy. Like when me and Mathis do like an alien episode and we're like, he's got a new book out. This is not that. This is a former coroner. He's a trained lawyer and doctor. He's performed 17,000 autopsies. He gave expert testimony on the deaths of Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., Elvis Presley, JonBenet Ramsey, Lacey Peterson. Like this guy is and continues to be before and after he broke his theory about the Kennedy assassination. Was an expert. And now in 2022, as a 90-year-old man, he is saying, I stand by what I said and that I still believe there was no lone gunman. You know, it's a conspiracy. There's a lot more to this article, but here's a little more of it for Mathis to read from the guy.
Sure.
Just to give you some fertilizer, because right now, as we reach the end of this, I want to give you guys the homework. And I don't mean you guys, obviously, Mathis and Jesse, but you guys out there listening. I want you to consume as much.
Yeah, there's so much I want to talk about.
Really, I want to encourage a situation where you can consume as much bullshit about the JFK Kennedy assassination as you can to prepare for these episodes. But also know that you're doing it in the mindset that, you know, American culture is just a metatextual map of nonsense and that we'll never know for sure what's true and what's not.
It's also important to know, like, man, and especially in that particular point, even if, you know, you believe that Harvey Oswald was like a lone gunman, Kennedy had a million enemies and they were all in Dallas around that time.
Yeah.
Mafia connections were in Dallas that hated him. You know, tons of mafia have claimed that they were the ones to fire the fatal bullet. Like there's a lot out there.
You don't have to start on the fringe to find details about this that are upsetting.
Exactly.
You can read just the Warren Report. I read so much of the Warren Report. And even in that, there's just like threads that go nowhere.
Even as vice president, I mean, a big reason he immediately started having cabinet meetings is because they hated each other. And this was back in the day when your vice president was more somebody that was from the other party that to like sow a unity.
Yeah.
In that way,
it used to be second place.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, it used to be kind of a second place prize. But Johnson hated Kennedy and was, you know, thrilled to just become president.
That's a whole other is like one of the theories. That could be a whole theory right there. But yeah, this is.
Am I reading this?
Yeah, this is a quote from that article from the other day in the New York Post.
Okay. In 1978, Wecht, as a member of the forensic pathology panel assembled by the House Select Committee of Assassinations, HSCA, testified in favor of a second gunman. He was the lone dissenter. I really stood alone, he said. For one, the gunshot wound in Kennedy's back, which the Warren Commission said had an upward trajectory, couldn't have been caused by Oswald as the sole assassin firing from above, Wecht said. Under the single bullet theory, Oswald is the sole assassin. He's firing from the sixth floor window as the Texas School Book Depository building, so the bullet is moving from up downward, right? So how the hell could it go upward? Wecht believes an additional shot from a second gunman was fired from the front behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll, and that two bullets hit Kennedy, one from the rear and one from the front. We'll talk about it.
That's, to me, this little quote here and this thought is the like seed in the 70s of like the scripts that people started really like sort of using to make this into a big conspiracy theory. Obviously, there's been conspiracy theories from the very beginning, but as we have seen on Chilluminati in the past, you know, a lot of what happens is that, you know, the thing happens and then over time, some key people have some theories about what the truth is that sort of just get latched onto or not. It's never like an objective academic inquest, right? So, you know, that's the idea of the second gunman on the grassy knoll and the plausibility of it, the extreme plausibility of it. At a glance is the thing that really, I think, drives people nuts about this whole thing. There's not a comprehensive theory that explains all the weird things that people see and that answers every question that people have about this. But yeah, there you have it, folks. 22 mini mysteries. Wow. Wasn't that fun?
Do
you want to
know what I believe? Are we going to talk about that a little bit? Or do you want to leave that for later?
Yeah, I do. I want to ask you guys, what do you guys think happened?
So I've done a lot of like, again, if you're a conspiracy guy, this is one of the topics you read and spend a lot of time in. I am with this guy where I think there were two shooters. However, I don't think the second bullet came from the grassy knoll. I believe what happened was the first bullet was fired and it spooked like a Secret Service agent that was nearby. And he accidentally fired off a bullet, which when he was pulling his pistol, which hit the back of Kennedy, which did that rigid motion, which sent him up. And I think Oswald fired his second shot, which killed, which would have hit the head of Kennedy and killed him. So we fired the first one, missed, hit that guy. I think a Secret Service agent pulled in accidentally. And I think we'll talk about that when we get to that aspect. And then I think Oswald finished the job.
Yeah.
That's my belief.
Man, this is one of those things that I obviously don't have answers, like most people don't have answers, right? Mm-hmm. But I would love answers. If I had to guess, I would say this was one of those things that, like, out of all the conspiracy theories, most of them can be debunked in some way. You know what I mean? Like, there's clearly some debunking. But the CIA one, it's a hard one to debunk because the CIA is so secretive. Mm-hmm. And so you can say pretty much anything you want about the CIA killing Kennedy, and it could be true. And I think because that's the case, I think of all the conspiracy theories, that's the most fun. Just because it's like, ooh, the CIA, they're creepy. But I have no clue. I don't know. I am excited to see what you turn up, Alex, in your top 10.
There's all kinds of things. There's mafia stuff. There's alien stuff.
I never bought mafia. I never bought aliens. I never even like. But I also can't buy, because it's so insane, I can't buy lone gunman. Like, I can't buy that either.
It's so too
I
just, crazy.
I don't know.
If you guys want a primer, I think a great shortcut. First of all, it's not factually accurate. I want to open with that. But if you want a good primer on the vibe of the Kennedy assassination conspiracy-ness and stuff, I recommend watching the classic 1991 Oliver Stone movie, JFK.
To the left.
It is long.
Yep.
It is long. It is not that good of a movie, but it is really interesting if you like JFK. And you'll really finally understand that one Seinfeld episode a lot better, because Wayne Knight is in both the movie JFK and in the show Seinfeld, and it really pays off. And
the magic bullet, yeah.
Yeah, it really pays off. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually one we should do on Chilluminati 3000 or whatever the ripoff show we're doing is called.
How dare you? How dare you? People loved Mazes and Monsters. They had a really good time. They loved
our watching of it. Yeah, I'd say is a more accurate thing.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. I loved watching that movie.
I had a great time watching it, but it was because I was with three friends and I wasn't alone with just the message of that movie to sit with.
Fair enough.
But that was fun. Thank you guys for a fun first episode of the year. And I hope the second episode of the year is just as neat as the first one.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. We're going back to serial killer land on the next episode, everybody. Get ready.
Remember,
it's going to be a joyful ride.
As far as Alex is concerned, JFK, no JFK. JFK, no JFK. You get it? That's the part. That's the pattern.
I got the pattern. I'm excited.
I got you guys. I tricked you all. I got you all. Yeah, I'm the Riddler and you're Batman. I got you. I'm the best. Every mystery, every episode that I do is going to be set in mid-century America this whole year. Get ready. Goodbye.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out here!" So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.